We're talking Broadway here, we're talking color and light with someone who knows more about it than most people alive, quite honestly. Our guest on the phone, calling all the way from New Hebrides, Scotland. So I'm really sorry. And this is the furthest distance phone call that we have ever had on the show, something of a milestone. He has designed more than 500 productions worldwide. He's the winner of a Drama Desk Award for Lighting for that great revival of Showboat a few years ago. He's also won an Outer Critics Award and a Dora Award up in Canada. And let's see, back in 1957, he founded a company called Theatre Projects that is still going strong and that we will talk about. Plus, he's the author of several major, major books on theatre and lighting design, including Stage Lighting Design, and his brand new book called A Theatre Project, A Backstage Adventure. So please welcome the very adventurous Richard Pilbro to the neighborhood. Mr. Pilbro, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Am I pronouncing, is it Pilbro or Pilbrow?
That's an interesting question. I'm not sure, but let's call it Pilbro. My father never made up his mind.
Oh, okay. So I guess the first thing that I want to ask is, at what point did you realize that not only that you were into the theater, but that you were into the whole backstage idea of how it looked and how it seemed and how to create those images?
Well, I was a pretty small child. I think probably the age of 12, 13, I became fascinated with everything to do with backstage in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
And I originally wanted to be a director and spend all my childhood doing theater in, you know, amateur theater and school theater and stuff, and then had the great good fortune to become a stage manager very young, straight out of drama school. And from that I segued into stage lighting, and it was that time in England, we're talking 1957,
mm-hmm.
It was a whole new profession. It hadn't become established in Britain, so I was one of the first people in the field, and it was a happy accident of timing.
Actually, if I can just break in here for a moment, when you say that it was brand new in 1957 as a profession, what did people do before then? I mean, shows had to be lit back in the 1890s, back in the 1920s, and, you know.
Yeah, sure. Well, it was different in England and America were both different. In England, basically the director used to light shows, helped by the electrician. In America, there was a different tradition where the scene designer was responsible for the lighting. And so as lighting got a little more complicated in the 30s, before World War II,
mm-hmm.
It gradually became a specialty. And the first ever modern lighting designers were found in the States, people like Abe Fader and Gene Rosenthal. But it came to England sort of 20 years later, and I was lucky to be one of the first.
Wow. And what, in other words, with people who aren't familiar, let's say, with Broadway design at all, except having maybe seen a Broadway show or a show on tour, how do you describe what you do? I mean, they would say, well, everything has to be lit. You have to focus spotlights and just put lighting on the stage. How do you describe lighting for theater and dance and things like that?
Well, that's a real problem for the lighting designer. I mean, basically one's job is to learn exactly what the show is all about and what the director and the scene designer want to achieve with the production. And then it's our role as the lighting designer to sort of envisage how the play should be lit. And lighting is more than just illumination. It's more than just having enough light so you can see the actors. Light can also act as light does in nature to affect the emotions. You know, it can make you cheerful, it can make you gloomy. And
mm-hmm.
Lighting design tries to use these qualities of light to help telling the story of the show, make a musical more exciting, more dramatic, and whatever. You're trying to help the whole production communicate to its audiences.
When you were learning your craft in the 1950s, was there ever a show or a tech rehearsal or even just in the early days of putting the thing together when you had some kind of revelation where you put three light things together and you saw something on the stage and you just were knocked out and it's like, oh, I didn't realize... ...
Well, I think probably two shows. One was West Side Story when it was done in London. It was originally by Gene Rosenthal. And I must say, I saw that. I was a kid. I was at drama school. And that absolutely knocked me out. I thought, my God, this is astonishing. And then another, a play in London lit by the founder of English lighting design, a man named Joe Davis. That had light coming in through a window that sort of was absolutely the most beautiful thing you ever saw in your life, as if the sun was shifting across, the clouds were shifting across the sun. It was quite magical. And that again made me sit there and think, my goodness, lighting has got an extraordinary ability to affect the emotions and help tell stories.
I have to say,
I caught the bug.
Well, yeah, I mean, I have to say that I didn't really notice lighting design per se as a beautiful art form until I was watching a show of yours off Broadway. Oh gosh, must be 15 years ago or so. You did a John Guare play called Four Bab. No, it was on Broadway. Sorry, called Four Baboons Adoring the Sun.
And I remember it well.
Yeah, hated the play. Sorry to say, but I remember. There was a scene with the sun or some kind of sun rising, and it was just so ravishingly beautiful that I just sat.
Wow.
Yeah. Sorry?
I'm impressed. Thank you.
Yeah, well, I had a look at something in the play. I was stuck in my watch. So I was like, whoa, oh, there's something pretty on the stage. Let me see that.
Right.
But it was beautiful. I mean, it was really. And then I said, oh, I never looked in the playbill or anything for the lighting designer. I never really, with all due respect, noticed. And then that day, I was like, wow, who lit this? And it was Richard Pilbrow. And you've also done, you haven't had that many credits on Broadway, which surprises me.
Absolutely, no. Mm-hmm. I mean, I spent the first, two-thirds of my career in London.
Mm-hmm.
And lit in a huge number of shows in the West End. And then I was involved with Laurence Olivier when the National Theatre Company began, and I was his lighting director for many years.
All right, stop right there,
and
please. Richard, if I may, stop right there, please. And you were Laurence Olivier's lighting designer. What was that like? What was he like to work with? What did he demand?
Oh, wow. It's hard to find words to describe him. He was the most extraordinary person, a great human being, had enormous humility as well as being the greatest actor of probably the 20th century. He was an absolutely charming, charming man. Very demanding. He knew exactly what he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Very demanding, and he pushed everyone on the team to, give of their best. But he was also an extraordinarily sweet guy. He ran the National Theatre Company for many years, and he knew the names of everyone on the staff. And not only the names of everyone on the staff,
mm-hmm.
he knew the names of their wives and their children. And he'd sit in the canteen, and chat with anyone who happened to sit next to him. He was an extraordinary man.
That's
great,
lovely.
Privilege to work for him.
That's terrific. I mean, everybody says you want to hear the dirt and the gossip and the TMZ kind of thing, but I like hearing good things about famous people. As a matter of fact, you worked, everybody's collaborative in the theater, so you lit a Broadway show that had Elizabeth Taylor in it about 3 decades ago, and everybody had warned you that Elizabeth Taylor would be really difficult and a pain in the ass, and if she didn't like you or didn't like what you were doing, you were gone. But your experience was good, I heard.
Oh, it was extraordinary. Yes, I was warned that she had demanded the, quote, best designer in London, and they picked me for some reason. And I was told she was extremely difficult and would be very, very fussy. And so I was pretty nervous about the whole thing. And we lit the first text started, and we did the first act, and then we broke for dinner, and not a word of complaint out of her. In fact, dinner break, she strolled down into the orchestra and came up to my desk, and she said, "Where do you eat in this place?" So I said, "Well, I and the boys are going over to the pub over the road." She said, "Could I join you?"
Wow.
And I said, "Sure." So every night for, I think, 4 or 5 nights, we would troop over to the pub right next to the stage door of the theater. And she was a smasher. I mean, she had this all roaring with laughter, and she was great fun with all the guys. That's a terrific experience.
It's a story that you like hearing about. But
I certainly enjoyed it.
but to be fair, let's get the dark side then. Were there any actors or directors that you worked with that you had to muster every bit of your strength not to have a light fall and crash down on their heads?
Well, now you're getting into delicate area, aren't you? I've had some rough times. There were some times where the actor doesn't like what she's doing and can be very difficult and temperamental. But on the whole, you cope with those things. Probably my trickiest moment was I was very, very, very young at the time. As I lit a Brecht show with Peter O'Toole in it, and Peter had just become a big star.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole show was using projected scenery, which means you have to light it very carefully, because if you overlight the show, all the projected scenery disappears. It's washed out.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, Peter got very impatient about this because he thought he wasn't well enough lit. He wanted a follow spot and stuff like that. And he got really angry and demanded at one time that I be replaced. And the director said, Richard, what are you going to do about it? And I stood up. I was very young. I was like 20-something at the time. I was really frightened. And I stood up and I said, Bill, if Mr. O'Toole would pay a little more attention to his performance and less to the illumination, we might all be more confident of success.
Wow.
That was a long, long pause. And the director, thank God, said, get on with it, Peter, and Peter did. And it all went very well from then on.
You had a pair of stones on you, my friend. You sure? Oh, my gosh. What got into you?
Foolhardiness.
Richard, are you on a cell phone by any chance? Because we're getting
I'm on a landline, but it may not be the best quality because I am an awful long way from civilization.
Well, what are you doing in New Hebrides anyway?
Well, it's a very, very long time ago. In fact, over 50 years ago, I came up here on holiday and fell in love with the place, and I bought a little ruined farmhouse.
Oh.
Which took about 10 years to build, and now it's here, and I and my children and grandchildren try to enjoy it every summer. And it's a great escape from Broadway, I can tell you. It's like the opposite. I have no company here but sheep.
Well,
and a wife and friends.
You need to qualify that. You know, a man with no company but sheep is... A little scary there. We're talking with Richard Pilbro on Dave's Gone By here from the University of Northern Colorado all the way up to Scotland. But let's not give the idea that you are just sort of sitting back in Scotland completely retired. I mean, you're still very much working, am I right?
Dave, I'm having a reception problem.
Yeah.
Can you repeat that?
I'm saying that you're not retired. You're still very much active and working.
Yeah, I'm sort of, I think you'd call it semi-retired, but I'm still lucky. I still like the odd show, and I'm still involved with theatre projects, the company that I began, that spends most of it, we spend most of our time designing theatre buildings.
Ooh.
And we sort of do that all around the world.
Well, may I ask...
I'm still involved to a certain extent.
Sorry, you're really... I don't know, I think the sheep are getting in the way of the signal here, but I do want to ask, since your new book is called A Theater Project, A Backstage Adventure, which is all about that company that you founded, Theater Project, the initial startup of it was about being a lighting, design, and rental company, but what is the journey of Theater Project? You there?
Yes, I lost you a moment.
Okay. If you could tell us briefly the theater project story. In other words, you founded your own lighting, design, and rental company, and then what happened? And why did you leave the National to do it?
Basically, because I started wanting to be a lighting designer before there was really such a profession in Britain, I had to find a way of earning a living because nobody would actually pay me to do it. So I started this little company, and we rented out second-hand cheap lighting equipment, and I provided my services for nothing.
Wow.
Then we were very, very lucky and began to do quite well.
Mm-hmm.
So we expanded and went into the sound design in the theatre, which again was just beginning in Britain. And then with a great stroke of good fortune, I was asked to come to Broadway. Tony Walton, the designer, invited me to come to do a show on Broadway. And this was a funny thing happened on the way to the Forum, the original production.
Huh. I didn't know that.
And I was the projection consultant. I designed a method of projecting scenery, which in those days was very novel. And so that was my first introduction to the States.
That's funny. I thought it was Golden Boy. I thought you were
No, no, this was before Golden Boy.
Huh.
Golden Boy was the second show.
Okay.
But anyway, as a result of doing Forum, I met Hal Prince. And Hal asked me to become his partner in London, producing shows.
Mm-hmm.
So I produced A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum in London. And then shows like She Loves Me, Fiddler on the Roof, Company, Cabaret, Little Night Music, all those fabulous Hal Prince shows, I actually produced them in London.
Well, may I ask, Richard,
an amazing breakthrough for me.
Astonishing breakthrough, but that sounds like the complete opposite of what your skill set was and what you were into, because as a lighting designer, projection designer, and learning that, wasn't becoming a producer just about kind of begging people for money and making sure things were on budget?
Oh,
hello? Hello?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, there you are. I'm saying,
it was an enormous change in my life.
Yeah.
So I became a producer, as well as being a backstage sort of person, I became a producer as well. Then really as a result of this sort of double life I was leading, I began to get involved in designing new theatre buildings. People in the 60s began to build theatres in England, which they hadn't done for many, many years because of World War II and the Depression.
Hmm.
So I began to be asked by architects and by clients to help them design their new theatre.
And can
so
I ask?
I really found myself with three careers, lighting, producing, and consulting.
How long were you able to keep up all three?
Well, until about yesterday.
Okay, good. Well, let me ask you about designing a theater. I mean, what do you keep in mind? I mean, how do you even begin? Is there a vision? Is there just a budget? I mean, what's plan zero for starting a theater?
Well, the first thing is, what's the theater for? Mm-hmm. Obviously, there are a million different types of theater. I mean, we are involved in everything from small school halls up to opera houses and major drama theatres and concert halls. We do concert halls as well. And so the first thing is to decide what is it for and what is the scale of the operation. You know, is this a big professional operation or is it a small, modest one?
Mm-hmm.
Then basically every theatre has one thing in common. It's a place where actors perform and audiences go to share in that performance. It's a place where actors meet audiences. And the most important thing about any theater is how exciting that place is to witness a show in. You know, the great theaters of the world are places that are a thrill to go into even before the show's begun.
Sure.
And we've tried to sort of understand what makes some theatres good and some theatres less good.
And
we've sort of specialised in that, and we've now done this, built theatres all around the world. I think we've knocked up about, 1,200 projects in
good Lord.
Many countries all around the world.
Is there a particular favorite award of yours, one that you're most proud of?
That's a hard question because they're all so different. The Steppenwolf Theater in Chicago,
wow,
we designed, and that's a great favorite. The Walt Disney Concert Hall in Los Angeles, the Frank Gehry Building, I mean, that's pretty special. And then the building that started us off working around the world was the National Theatre of Great Britain. Because I moved from being Olivier's lighting designer to becoming his consultant in the design of the new building.
Oh.
And that was, you know, a sort of major advance.
Well, yeah.
And obviously the building became very famous, what you could say notorious, and people in various countries around the world started approaching me about would we help them in their theatres, and we began working in Hong Kong and the Middle East and all over the place.
Then we
seriously began working in the United States in the late 70s.
But can I ask one quick question? I mean, I giggled, and it was a kind of a cute, funny line about about the National... Hold on. You there?
Again.
About the National Theater being notorious. Why was the building notorious?
Oh, it was notorious. It was very famous at the time because it wasn't finished when it opened.
Oh, okay.
The whole construction process was extremely delayed. It was a time of great troubles in England. There were national strikes and things like that, and so the construction process got very, very delayed. And finally, they decided they couldn't wait any longer. They had to open the building, but a lot of it wasn't really finished. And in particular, a lot of the stage equipment for which I was responsible wasn't finished. So it was quite a sort of scandal at the time.
Oh, wow.
And it all got to work eventually, but not for actually a couple of years after the formal opening.
Huh.
So in theatrical circles, it was quite notorious, shall we say, but it brought good things for me as well as bad ones.
Well, speaking of good and bad, and we are talking to theater designer and lighting designer Richard Pilbro, one of the arcs of your new book, apparently, is talking about a theater project, the fact that you grew very, very big as far as becoming a rental company and helping with design of these places. But I think part of the arc of the book is that it got too big at one point, and there was sort of a crisis period.
Hmm? No, in the late 1970s, the company probably employed over 200 people, and we expanded enormously, and we got too big, and we had a series of business mishaps, and so we had to go through a major reconstruction of the company, and we closed down quite a lot of activities that we had been involved in that were peripheral to our central mission, which was the process of designing lighting and designing sound and designing theatres.
Hmm.
So we rebuilt the company in the 1980s, and it's been really very, very successful ever since.
Great. Cool. Let me remind people that you can get A Theater Project, A Backstage Adventure from Plaza Media Books, wherever you can buy books, and also your earlier texts, Stage Lighting and Stage Lighting Design, are some of just the basic necessary books that anybody going into theatrical design just has to have. They're just, you know, the rudiments of exactly what you do. So let me ask you a question about, again, some of your Broadway stuff that you did. One of your more recent assignments here was a production of Our Town, which was Paul Newman's last Broadway show. And
absolutely.
So I'm kind of curious, A, about, you know, working with Paul Newman, and B, Our Town is a tough show because you're not working usually with any kind of real set design. So everything is really chairs and lighting. Does that present any specific challenges?
Dave, I've lost you again, I'm afraid.
Okay. The question is just about A, working with Paul Newman, and B, lighting a show like Our Town that doesn't give you a lot of it gives you costumes, but it doesn't give you set, it doesn't give you props. It's just a stage and people. You there? Ah, Richard, stop riding the sheep. Richard?
I'm sorry, Dave, this connection is really giving me trouble.
Oh, Lord. Are you indoors at least, or where are you?
No, I'm indoors, but it's a landline, but it's certainly misbehaving.
It's 2011. You need to do a telephone. Now, that's what you need to do. A theater project needs to expand into telephones and wireless. But can you hear me? I can't believe I'm saying this. Can you hear me now?
Should I call you back?
Yeah, why not give us a buzz back?
Do I ring through again?
Yeah, give me a call back, okay?
I will. I'll do it straight away.
I'll be right here.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Richard Pilbrow, Amongst the Sheep. Richard Pilbrow, a major, major lighting designer on Broadway, in regional theater, all over the world. In fact, he's very, very far in the away in the world as we speak. He's in the middle of New Hebrides, Scotland, believe it or not, on a regular landline telephone inside his house, and yet it sounds like he's in the middle of a cattle drive in a windstorm. So we may kind of lose him again, but I'm hoping to get a couple more questions out of him. Richard, can you hear me?
Yeah, but only just, I'm afraid, Dave.
Okay, well, I'll ask a quick question and then talk as long as you like, and then I'll sort of break in when there's silence. So, please tell me about Our Town on Broadway, Paul Newman, go.
Well, that was a pretty exciting production. Jim Norton directed it, and Paul Newman starred in it. Tony Walton, who's my great chum, who's been my sort of mentor through most of my career, designed it. And Paul is the most extraordinary performer. You know, no matter how famous, again, he's a man of great humility. And it was quite something to work with him.
Mm-hmm.
We did it first at Westport, then on Broadway, and then we filmed it for high-definition television. And that was quite an experience, quite wonderful.
Yeah, if people want to see that, Our Town, you can get it, I guess, at your local libraries, and I think it's even on sale. And Our Town is such a wonderful play. But, Richard, if you can hear me, what are the challenges of lighting a play like Our Town as opposed to a more standard play with lots of scenery and
Dave,
stuff?
Forgive me, but I actually can't hear you.
Okay. Richard,
I should call you again.
Okay.
I'm sure. Really sorry about this.
Three times is the charm. Okay, try one more time, and I'll speak to you in a moment. Okay.
I'll try one more time.
All right. Bye now. Ah, yes. The joy is... this is why I do not understand two different things. First of all, it's 2011. We're talking about a telephone that was invented by Alexander Graham Bell well over 100 years ago. Plus, we're talking to a man who makes his career putting wires together for lighting and sound and things. And yet, it's like this is worse than two tin cans with string. Anyway... Let me remind you what's going to be on the rest of Dave's Down By today, including Rabbi Sol Solomon giving his thoughts on the death of Jackass actor Ryan Dunn. We'll also be going inside Broadway for theater news, as well as a farewell to the late actor Peter Falk of Columbo fame. We'll be doing our Bob Dylan segment, Bob Dylan Sooner and Later, with songs about light. Glad I didn't pick songs about sound. And, I'll be telling more about my trip to Italy about a month ago. And we'll be playing some Clarence Clemens Bruce Springsteen songs in honor of the late big man who left us about a week ago. I think that takes care of it all. And we're just waiting for Richard Pilbrow to call back. So in that time, I also want to remind you that you can go to davesgoneby.com for all the archives of this show for the past 8.5 years, davesgoneby.com. Even Richard Pilbrow, when his internet works, likes to surf and check out that. He said some very complimentary things about my website, so that was very, very nice. And what else? We have... You can email me, davesgoneby@aol.com. Might as well do the sponsors too, since we're waiting for the phone to ring, and let you know that this program is brought to you by Hewlett Minuteman Press, the copy kings of Broadway. Since the mid-1970s, the Toron family has owned and operated Hewlett Minuteman Press. They do printing, binding, copying. They can put your logo on a mug or a pencil or a calendar. They also do New Year's cards and cards for all the holidays. They do good work. They do it cheaply. Well, no, they do it reasonably priced, and they're great people. Hold on. UNC Radio, Richard Pilbro, is this you? Are we on the air with you?
This is me, and it does sound a little better.
Let's hope. Let's hope. Anyway, I'm just telling folks that if you're on Long Island and you're in the wonderful town of Hewlett, please stop in to Hewlett Minuteman Press. They are the copy kings, and tell them Dave sent you for 10% off any copy or any job, big or small, at Minuteman. Well, welcome back, Richard Pilbro, lighting designer extraordinaire. Let's see, you were talking, you know what, we're having very bad luck talking about our town, so let's talk about something else. One of the shows you also produced in London was Fiddler on the Roof with Topol. And are you sort of credited with discovering Topol here?
Yeah, I think that's sort of true. We had great difficulty casting the part in London. We actually couldn't find anyone who was really right to play Tevye. And Hal Prince's secretary at the time in New York wrote me a postcard saying, had I thought about Chaim Topol in Sala? Well, I saw this thing and I didn't know what she meant. I didn't understand what the message was, and I sort of put it on one side and forgot all about it. And about 3 months later, I was leafing through stuff on my desk and saw this note, and so I rang her up. I said, what on earth are you talking about? And apparently, it was about a movie named Sala that she had seen, which had an old Jewish guy in it who sang a rather tragic song.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, well, that's interesting. So anyway, we got hold of the movie, and indeed it did have this old gentleman singing a very sort of tragic, turgid song. So I found out where he came from. He was an Israeli actor.
Uh-huh.
Invited him to come to London to audition. And he arrived, and to my considerable distress, he was a young guy. He wasn't 70 years old as I thought he was. He was like in his early 30s. And I thought, my God, we've wasted the airfare from Tel Aviv to London. However, he went up on stage and did a perfectly superb audition. He actually sang the opening number, Tradition, really beautifully. And Jerry Bock and Sheldon Harnick were with us. And we all said, my goodness, this is a man we have to get. Then we found out he didn't really speak any English. It was quite a problem because we were going to open in 2 months' time. But we sat down with him and he promised he could learn English and would learn English.
Mm-hmm.
And we decided to take the risk with this entirely unknown actor.
And of course, Topol became more famous when he actually did the movie version of Fiddler on the Roof.
I mean, in the first days, the beginning of Fiddler on the Roof, everyone, only thought about Zero Mostel. But then Topol opened in London with this enormous success, and of course he got the movie.
Well, I have to say, as much as Topol is a wonderful, wonderful actor, it is kind of a sad thing for people who love Broadway and love that show that Zero did not get, didn't do it in film, that we don't have that preserved. Wonderful as Topol may be, I mean, Zero is Zero.
Zero was the definitive performer in that role.
Now, can I ask you, since you were already working with Hal Prince and you helped on the original Fiddler on the Roof on Broadway, do you have any Zero Mostel stories? Was he impossible?
No, because I wasn't involved in the Broadway production.
Okay.
I was working with Hal as his partner in London, but I wasn't involved in the first production on Broadway.
Okay, because I'm always asking for Zero Mostel stories because he's a love him and hate him kind of guy. Let me ask also, we're finishing up our chat with Richard Pilbro. One thing I'm curious about, since you light not only Broadway and off-Broadway and things like that, but you light opera and ballet and dance, Is there a difference?
The phone's going mad again.
I know. I'm just asking, is there a difference in lighting design for Broadway versus opera and dance?
Oh, yeah, very different in many, many ways.
Such as?
Broadway is, often, might be much to be preferred. In Broadway, you have the time to do what you want to do, and you have your complete freedom of choice for all the equipment you need. You know, an equipment to a designer is as paintbrushes are to a painter. You can't do much unless you've got the right equipment in the right place.
Mm-hmm.
So Broadway allows you to have all the facilities you want and the time to do a good job with them. Opera is remarkable, and I mean, I love opera and ballet the same. The music's glorious, it's a tremendous experience, but it's a very abbreviated process. Putting the shows on, they always work in repertoire. There's different shows every night, different ballets happening each night, so the rehearsal process is extremely tight, very limited. You have to put things on tremendously quickly. Ballet opening the Met, American Ballet Theatre, in a couple of weeks' time, and I actually lit it 3 years ago, but they're bringing it back. Sleeping Beauty, and again designed by Tony Walton. This is a huge production. I mean, the four enormous sets and very, very complicated lighting plot. And we did the whole thing in like 4 afternoons, which certainly kept the life out of me.
No, wait, are you saying you didn't?
I've never had to work so fast in my life, but that's the way ballet operates. And of course, they're very highly skilled technicians working on the shows, but it's not like Broadway. Broadway, surprisingly, is, I would say, more leisurely, but there's much more time to do things really carefully and really properly.
That surprises me. I would figure, like opera, they just throw money at you. maybe not.
Yeah, they spend money on a lot of other things, like musicians.
All right. Hey, can I ask you, one of the things you also lit for was Showboat, that huge, epic revival on Broadway,
yeah,
that Garth Drabinsky put together, I guess, about 15, 20 years ago. I mean, we know now where some of Garth Drabinsky's money was going. But did he say, do whatever it costs, just make it look beautiful? Was that how it was?
That's how it was. Garth was an extraordinary character. I'm going to say the theater industry miss him a lot. I mean, he did have an amazing entrepreneurial spirit. But, of course, he was probably far more reckless than he should have been. And certainly on Showboat, you know, under Howell's direction, we were given, I mean, literally unlimited resources. And it was great fun for us working on the shows, and the end result was terrific. But it probably cost too much money. And if you spend too much money, you can get yourself in trouble.
Well, especially if you're keeping two sets of books, which apparently he was.
Well, that I will draw a veil over.
No, but it interested me in the fact that also you had, I wouldn't say carte blanche, but imagine going into a Broadway show and just being told, doesn't matter, just, you know, which is what I guess Julie Taymor had when she started Spider-Man, of like, just do it, we trust you.
I fear so, yeah.
You know, go do it.
Carte blanche is not always a good idea.
Wow. Well,
you know, I think that all probably artists, theatre people, we work well with a budget, you know. I mean, every picture has to have a frame, and every show should have a budget that makes sense. You know, you've got to appeal to the public, and if you spend too much money, you can't keep a show going.
Right.
Everything is about balance between all those different factors, you know.
Easily said, but of course, as we know, it's not remotely easily done. There's no real magic formula, and I don't think there ever will be, really.
No, there is. But of course, what Garth had, of course, Howell Prince had it many years before. I mean, Howell was a brilliant, brilliant producer as well as a brilliant director. And a producer makes things happen, and makes things happen in a manner that's going to make them successful. we lack good producers these days, frankly. I mean, there aren't too many of them around.
Well, I think it's tough because...
shows are often put on now by committees of right. wealthy people, and there's nobody, like, in charge. And if you have Hal Prince in charge of the show, you know, everything is done purposefully toward a specific end.
True.
Nowadays, things... There are too many people and too much money involved, probably.
Well, everybody gets their name above the title. You know, they give $500,000.
Yeah, that's right.
There they are.
Ridiculous. Yeah. I mean, the days of David Merrick and Hal Prince, the theater was going through a period of, you know, enormous success.
Although, I mean, there's a reason they call it the Fabulous Invalid. You know, you can go to the Broadway League and they'll explain exactly why Broadway has never been more successful than it is right now.
Sure. No, I mean, the ticket prices are very high and tickets are still being sold in great quantities, so things are very successful.
And how are things over...
I still wonder whether we're going to get, you know, the great musicals that, say, a Hal Prince or David Merrick created, you know, that... They're not too common these days.
No, well, they weren't that common way back when. If you got two or three classics a season, that was pretty
good. I'm probably being nostalgic.
Man, well, aren't we all, you know? But we have had really a delightful time chatting with Richard Pilbrow. He is theater designer, lighting designer. He's also the author of three books, including his brand new book, A Theater Project, A Backstage Adventure. And if it's anything you know, like as interesting and fun as it's been talking to him on the phone here on Dave's Gone By, it's a must read. So last question for Mr. Pilbrow. If you could pick two or three shows that you have worked on as a designer, let's say, not even so much as a producer, that, again, you're proudest of or are part of your biggest legacy, what would those be?
Oh, God, you're asking tough questions.
I know.
often the last one.
Okay.
I just did a production for the Irish Rep in New York.
Oh, I love that.
A little play called Molly Sweeney. And it's the most fascinating, wonderful piece of dramatic theater you can imagine. And it was in this tiny theater. The ceiling is 11 feet high. Mm-hmm. And we had almost no resources. I think I had 60 or 70 lights as opposed to Showboat, which probably had 600 or 700.
Right.
And it was a truly magical experience.
Well, Molly, I actually saw that production. It was very, very good.
Oh, my God, did you?
Well, wow. Yeah, I used to live in New York, and then I visit.
Right, sure.
Two or three times a year, so that's one of the productions that I Geraldine Hughes was in it, and I think Jonathan Hogan, and just a good play. And again, it's one of those interesting plays because you're lighting not a lot of scenery, not a lot of anything. It's three people doing monologues on stage.
That's right.
But you've got to keep them...
And you're just there trying to help them tell the story, concentrating on whoever's speaking and trying to help tell the story. And I thought that was wonderful theater. I was captivated by it.
Well, we have been captivated.
And we're doing that. We're repeating it in Long Wharf in New Haven in September.
Oh, lovely. Great.
Yeah, which is going to be fun.
Well, it has been great fun and lovely fun talking with Richard Pilbrow. Richard, I wish you a wonderful vacation out in New Hebrides, although I would, if I were you, get a new cable and phone provider out there.
Thank you.
But it's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much indeed, Dave.
Thank you, Richard Pilbrow. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Bye.